In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
You're back with the Mighty Manfred on your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. Today's interview is part two of my conversation with Jarrett Reddick, musician, singer, songwriter, producer, voice actor, and frontman for the Texas rock band Bowling for Soup. Here in part two, we'll talk about some artists he's worked with, including Not Your Girlfriends, Ryan Hamilton, and Kurt Baker. We'll also chat about his voice acting career as Chuck E. Cheese, and we'll discuss the band's latest single and video, Alexa Bliss, about the famed female wrestler. We'll start off by hearing some of that track, followed by my talk with Jarrett on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. From where we left off, we're talking about you working with the Dolly Rots, and now a group that you've actually produced is Not Your Girlfriends. So tell me about the group and how you discovered them, how you came across them.
Yeah, man. You know, you talk about the light in my eye. I had a friend here named John Nicholson, who worked for Hollywood Records. Uh-huh. And his daughter was starting to become a musician. She's a very established musician now here in Dallas. And I'll give her a plug. Her name's Remy Riley, and she's a singer-songwriter, and she's amazing. But she was starting to play some open mics here around the Dallas area. And he saw these three girls dressed very adorably, get up on stage and play Led Zeppelin songs and like rock. And he was like, man, I think there's something here. I think you should come see this. And so, you know, a bit of history behind me is I tend to go all in on everything I do. And I kind of had a few things that I tried to manage and try to work with that it didn't work out. Mm-hmm. Mostly because of just the desire and the drive of the act. So I was like, you know, I don't really know if I want to spend my time doing this, but I'm like, okay, man, I'll come check it out. And so I met them, met their parents, and just literally there was an instant connection. I just was blown away by them. I was blown away by them musically. I was blown away by their souls. And just like, I was like, who are your favorite bands? And they're like, we like Paramore and U2. And we like 30 Seconds to Mars and Led Zeppelin. And I was just like, what is happening? You know, like, I can't believe what I'm hearing. Cause at the time Gigi was about to turn 11 and the other two were 13. So, you know, now they're about to be 16, which is crazy. But we have been through a lot together. We went into the studio and we did a couple of covers. We did a U2 song. I was on the outside of just Walk Away, I Will Follow. Yeah. And we did a Cure song, Friday I'm in Love, and we did videos for those. And then Liv just started coming to the studio with her mom, and we just started writing songs. And now she is a prolific songwriter. To be honest, I joke all the time. She doesn't even need me. But they've got singles out, and they've got, you know, airplay, and they've toured all over the place. And they were supposed to be doing a tour, you know, next month with the Dolly Rots. As main support nationwide tour, with, you know, hopefully that'll get rescheduled because of the COVID thing. But, you know, they've become such a special part of my life. And it's just so, so fun to just watch the watch dreams come true, like right before your eyes, you know, just how happy they are when they play in front of 5,000 people. You know, it's just it's an amazing experience for them and for me.
Well, you have children yourself, right?
I do. Yeah, I have my daughter Emma is 16. Oh my gosh, she just turned 17. My daughter Emma is 17. My son Jack is 14, and then my son Everett is 7.
Okay, so I have a daughter as well, and she turned 18 this May. So you're supposed to graduate here in a week or so, and of course, you know, the whole COVID thing has screwed with that. But I bring this up because. It's like the last thing she would ever want to do is, in fact, it would be on stage. So, like, as, you know, right? Complete opposite. So when she was a little kid and we would go in elementary school, there'd be these whatever the pageants, whatever the kids are up there all on the bleachers singing. And I could always find her in a second because she would be the one that you could literally see that all the blood had drained out of her face. She was looking like a ghost up on there, up on stage, right? She was terrified of being up there. So with what you do, I mean, are your kids like, yeah, let's start a band, Dad? Or are they like, no, get me away from that?
You know, it's so funny because I think they have that in them, but just no desire. You know, all of my kids can sing really, really well. But I kind of have to group them into older kids and Everett because it remains to be seen with Everett, my youngest. But, you know, with Emma, yeah, no desire to be in front of people, yet she would be amazing. Jack, you know, took theater, and his theater teacher was just emailing me constantly like, oh my God, this kid just has it, but he just has no desire. And I was a theater kid as well. So, you know, here's happy daddy, just like, oh man, here we go. Let's do this. I can't wait for one act plays and things, you know. And you know, he played drums for a while. Jack just has a hard time sticking with things. He's played every sport, but usually for one season. And he has played trumpet and he's played drums, but he just doesn't quite stick to it. He just hasn't found his thing yet, which is fine. You know, I don't want to beat it into them, but you know, my youngest is taking piano lessons and actually it's clicking, and he can sing. And he's much like me. So the way I really learned to sing was doing impressions. You know, when I was in cover bands, I was literally just impersonating whoever I was doing. And that's literally the way that I learned to, you know, make my voice do what it does. And so he's already doing that kind of thing too. So it remains to be seen whether or not he wants to be a drummer. And so we told him if he stuck with piano lessons until he was 8 or 9, that he'd get a drum set. So this might be the Christmas where the drums enter the Reddick house for the third time.
Well, good luck with that. So this, the Nerf Herder guy, Linus of Hollywood, now thinking he worked with you, producing Not Your Girlfriends?
He and I have been working together for 10 years. I mean, he mixes the Not Your Girlfriend stuff for me.
Okay.
So we've produced all the Bowling for Soup stuff together since 2009.
Okay.
And we do co-write a bunch for Bowling for Soup. He writes some stuff with me for our records and for our singles and stuff. He's my best friend. Earlier when I said Kelly's my best friend, that's a girl, that's not my wife. Linus is my best friend. And so, you know, we do a lot of stuff together. Pretty much anything that I produce, he mixes. And then we have a band together called Jurinus, which is basically just the first part of my name and the last part of his. And, you know, he is my musical soulmate. You know, it's you know, when you find a working relationship like that, where it's just like anything that I can think of that I want to do, he's in, you know. And
well, you have a record label together, right? Crappy Records.
Yeah, we did. I mean, it's not necessarily it's not active at the moment, but yeah, we had a label for a while and put out some great records. Put out an MC Lars record, which was really great, called This Gigantic Robot Kills, and we had a band called Sky Fox on the label for a while. And then we did a really cool Have a Crappy Summer, which it's time to start promoting that again, I guess. a compilation called Have a Crappy Summer, where we just got a bunch of bands to do songs about summer. And
Did you do anything with Kurt Baker?
We did. Yeah, we put out the Leftovers record. That's right. Yeah, gosh, you're good.
Well, Kurt, you know, was on Steven's label, Wicked Cool. And finding out stuff about you, it's like, oh wow, this here's another thing, here's somebody else that has a kind of a connection back to you. So Kurt Baker was a crappy artist, we can say that.
That's right. He was a crappy artist. He was in a band called The Leftovers.
Yeah.
And Linus produced that album. I actually co-wrote a Leftovers song called Weekend Girls with Kurt. And Kurt is, man, just what a fun guy. That dude is just never in a bad mood. He's just always fun to be around. Great.
Absolutely.
Great guy.
Now, I met him once. We were overseas. I met him over there, and he had already moved to Madrid at the time. Just whenever I've spoken with him and stuff, always up and just musically, it's just all these songs. I mean, the hooks and the ideas and the melodies, everything is really catchy. And, you know, here's another guy. We've talked about all these people like Kelly and all the people you've worked with are really, really talented. And he's just another guy. I feel like that guy should be huge. People really need to be hearing this guy. This is, you know, a contemporary spirit of rock and roll. It needs to be known.
I definitely agree. I think, that dude is, he's 90 to nothing all the time. And, you know, just he's hustling and doing really, really well over there, I hear. And so, you know, I hear from him every once in a while and obviously keep up with him on all the socials and stuff. And, that Leftovers record, check that out. Actually, the Leftovers record, I think it's called Eager to Please.
Yeah, we play some of the tracks off there, and I can't think of them offhand, but all of the songwriting is great. You know, it's like he's just dropped out of another time.
Yeah, 100%. I totally agree. Like, it's almost like he definitely has a vibe where it's like, where did you come from?
Well, let's talk again about Linus here for a second, because he's a Nerf herder. They did the theme song for Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He's written a bunch of tunes for TV shows like Weeds and Californication. And you were mentioning something earlier. I can't remember what show you mentioned that you had done a tune for, but you've done so much music for TV and film that there's a Bowling for Soup album, Bowling for Soup Goes to the Movies. And one of the songs on there, the Jimmy Neutron theme, you wrote with Man or Astro Man Star Crunch, Brian Causey. And, I play in the Woggles, and we early on used to play with those guys all the time. How did that come together?
You know, that is one of those things where it's even hard for me to understand how it all went down. I know that he had written that song for Jimmy Neutron, and they loved it, but they wanted it to have a bit of a more pop sensibility to it.
Yeah.
And so I just basically took his song and rewrote it, and we were never even in the same room. I've never actually even met him, so I can only hope that he doesn't hate it. But
did you ever see Man or Astro Man?
No, I didn't. I checked them out whenever I heard this whole thing, when this whole thing went down. And, it's really cool. But no, I never seen them before.
Well, they started playing again. Well, obviously not now, but it's definitely, all instrumental and a very, very visual thing that's going on, but not like not like a 60s thing, right? You know, we've got the pictures being projected behind. It's way more dynamic than that. Here's another question for you. Chuck E. Cheese, are you the voice of Chuck E. Cheese?
I am. I've been Chuck E. Cheese for about 9 years, ever since he became a little mouse, not a scary rat. He's, yeah, so he's a little rock and roll mouse now. And, you talk about nostalgia coming at you. You know, this is a great story, actually. I got a call from a friend of a friend who was like, "Hey, this is wacky, but do you have any interest in auditioning to be Chuck E. Cheese? Here's the deal. This guy saw you do improv," because I used to do improv comedy. So, and in my improv comedy, I did a bunch of stuff that was vocal things, because I can do impressions and things like that. So I sang a lot in my improv comedy, and the guy knew Bowling for Soup. So he had seen me do improv comedy, and they just got the account. And so all of these phone calls happened back and forth, my manager, them, like all this stuff. And I am in the studio in May of that year, and I think I'm in there auditioning. It's just, I'm reading stuff, and we're doing things over, and they're like, "Can you do this? Can you do this?" And they're like, "Okay, well, that's great." And so they're like, "All right, well, we'll need to do this again in a couple of months. This is awesome working with you," and, you know, yada, yada. And I left, and I called my manager, and I go, "I don't think I auditioned. I think I was just, like, actually doing my first commercials. I think I got the gig." But I didn't have a contract or anything at that point. So I didn't sign my contract until July, but I had been the mouse since May. So it's been very fun to be a part of it. And, you know, they've really let me take on the character. In fact, the guy, Matt Daniel, who writes all of the shows and who's pretty much responsible for all of the content for Chuck E. Cheese, for at least for the mouse himself, you know, he lets me do what I want to do. Like, I'll say, "I don't really think he would say that, you know, like, I think he would say it like this." And he's very cool about that, to let me, you know, have at least a little bit of control of, like, how, because I, you know, it's it probably sounds silly me being this serious about it, but I am really serious about it. Like, I love that little guy.
No, it's not silly at all, man. You know? I mean, you are inhabiting Chuck E. Cheese. You are Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. And, you know, for a lot of people, that will be the favorite part of their childhood, is one of those 500 and something stores, you know, and because it certainly was a big impact on me when I was a kid. So,
all right. So let me ask you then, you said you've done it for 9 years. So thinking of the ages of your kids, did you go with a family, your kids, to Chuck E. Cheese with you as Chuck E. Cheese?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, my son loves it. It's my youngest son. It is his favorite place. He loves it. My oldest son loves it as well, because, you know, he's 15 and most of the games are sort of geared towards younger kids. And so he finds them very easy. And he, you know, he feels like he's got a handle on things or whatever. So, yeah, they love it, you know, and it's really special to me, too, because my Everett, even though he knows it's me talking up there, he still goes up there and does the dance with the mouse and all of that stuff. And really, like, there's an excitement that happens when the guy comes out in the costume and stuff. And so it's one of the best parts about it for me is, you know, I've been doing this a really long time. And especially, you know, bands in my genre that I'm really close to, they're all having kids now, or they've got kids, and, you know, and so it's every week, every 2 weeks, where it's just like some tattooed dude with a mohawk is, you know, in a Chuck E. Cheese, like, tagging me on Instagram or sending me a picture going, "Well, you're singing happy birthday to my kid. This is weird." You know, like, and so I didn't have Chuck E. Cheese. We had Showbiz, which there's a whole, if you've never read the story about how it's actually a really interesting story to read about how the two restaurants became one. Mm-hmm. And at first they were Showbiz, but the Chuck E. Cheese model was just better, but they weren't being run right. And so, my grandmother in Lawton, Oklahoma had a Chuck E. Cheese, and I always liked it better. I loved the mouse, you know, to fast forward 20 years and to be him. You know, is a very special part of my life. It really is.
Well, let's see. The Dolly Rots, Kurt Baker, and Ryan Hamilton are all on Stephen's Wicked Cool Records label. We haven't mentioned Ryan yet. So you worked with him as a duo, right? People on Vacation?
Yeah, we did a band called People on Vacation for a few years and put out, I think, four records. And four records. We did an EP, two full albums, and a Christmas album. And, you know, we were pretty pretty good songwriters together as well. And those songs come up on my playlist every once in a while, and it's like, yeah, that was good stuff.
Yeah. Well, I was reading about the duo. It said no songs about relationships. So supposed to be like story songs. Was that the idea?
We had a we tried to set rules at first, but the idea was to not do what everybody else did. But yeah, as what happens with most things, that when you're developing them, all of the rules went out the window, because quite frankly, if you're a person and you're writing songs about life, you know, relationships are going to squeeze in there. There's nothing you can do about it. So I think pretty much we didn't last very long on the non-relationship thing. But, you know, we definitely had a bunch of rules as far as, like, the biggest rule was that there were no rules. Like, we didn't necessarily have to do verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, out, you know, like, right, so arrangements and things like that. Also, you know, sometimes we sang in unison rather than harmonize, and it had a really cool sound because our voices are really different. And, you know, so, and then sometimes things would lean kind of country and we wouldn't shy away from it. So yeah, it's, we had a good little run and put out some great music, and, it's good to see him doing so well.
Yeah. He's another great songwriter too, I have to say. And he's worked some with Steven. Steven has, they've co-written some songs together as well the last year or so.
Nice.
Well, I learned something about Wichita Falls, Texas, that I didn't know when I started, you know, getting ready for the interview and stuff. Want to guess what I learned about Wichita Falls, Texas?
Let's see. You might have learned that the falls that we have there is man-made. You might have learned, let me think about this for a second. What did you learn? We have the biggest bike race in the world, Hotter Than Hell 100. I don't know. What Shepherd Air Force Base is there. We had a huge tornado that I lived through in 1979.
Well, I've just learned four other things I didn't know, but it is the home of the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame and Museum.
That's right. Yes, you're right. And run by Johnny Mantell. What was his name? He was a world-class championship wrestler back in the day. The Pride of Montague County. I got it. Pride of Montague County, Johnny Mantell. Oh, and my parents went in there. They took my son. I've never been there. And my mom sent me a picture, and I'm like, holy crap, that's Johnny Mantell. So, yeah, it's a pretty crazy thing that they would pick Wichita Falls to put that of all places. But, you know, hopefully, I hope it survives.
Well, the reason I mentioned that is because your most recent single this year is Alexa Bliss. We played some of that before we started chatting. Tell me why you wrote a song for the 3-time Raw Women's Champion wrestler.
Well, you know, we met pretty much by accident. My son, Jack, had gotten into wrestling and was really heavy into it. And so I took him to a wrestling match, and we just had the best time, you know. And I haven't been into wrestling for years. I mean, when I was his age, I was, but it was pretty local back then. It was world-class championship wrestling here in Dallas. So I we loved the Von Erichs. And in fact, for those of you who are wrestling fans, if you remember the Von Erichs, my stage name was actually Jarrett Von Erich until I had a hit song, and it got really confusing with my songwriting and my stage name. So I readopted my own last name. My son and I were sitting there and enjoying the wrestling, and Alexa Bliss came out, and I looked at him and I go, hey, I think that girl likes my band. And he goes, what? And I go, yeah, there's somebody sent me a picture of her, and she's wearing a Bowling for Soup shirt. And so we stalked her on Twitter and Facebook, and sure enough, she had posted about Bowling for Soup. I mean, like, there was stuff like back when she was like in math class in high school going, supposed to be paying attention to the teacher, but listening to Bowling for Soup, you know, whatever. And, so I just sent her a message on either Instagram or Twitter. I can't remember. And I just said, hey, we're here. Hope you're, you know, that was awesome. Congratulations, whatever. And she was like, oh my God, are you coming backstage? And I'm like, no, how would I do that? You know, anyway. So long story short, I sent her some merch, and we just started talking online. And then she invited us up to the Royal Rumble in Philadelphia a few years ago. And I took my boys and my wife, and they got to meet everybody backstage and just had the time of their lives. We got like sixth row at this thing, and it was really, really fun. And so since then, we've just gotten to be great friends. I mean, we, you know, talk back and forth or whatever, and joke and things. And so I was watching her one time. I don't necessarily watch wrestling, I'll be honest, but it was just on. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, all of the music for these wrestlers is kind of all the same. Like, I wonder why nobody in my genre or hasn't like just written a song for somebody to just try to like bring the two worlds together, because I know there's pop punk fans out there that like wrestling. And so I was just, in fact, I called Linus and I go, "Hey, tomorrow at 2:00, we're going to write a song for Alexa Bliss." And, and so we got on Skype and, we wrote it. And I actually had to ask my neighbor, Jeff, for some bullet points from her, because all I had was what I could find on the internet, and I needed somebody to like kind of wrap it up for me. Right. And so, yeah, we did the song, but my favorite part of the whole thing is not only that it's done so well, but before it was even released, I sent it to her on her birthday and just the demo. Yeah. And she sent me a video. She was just in tears. Like, I can't believe this is happening. And so it's been a special thing for me and for her, and just, you know, for her to come to she came to my house to do the video and just was part of the family for a few days. And, you know, we're making plans to go to Disneyland. So, she's just, she's a great friend, even though I wouldn't mess with her.
Well, Disneyland or Disney World?
Probably World, I guess, because that's Orlando. That's where she.
Right. And I was reading something about her, her family. That's something her family would always try and do. So in the video, I was looking at the video and enjoying that. And then at the end, there's this pig. Is that her pet pig at the end of the video?
That is. So I say in the song, I go, "She's got a pig named Larry Steve, and he's so smart." And then at the end, I go, "Larry Steve." And that's Larry Steve at the end. And another tidbit about the video, that's my son in the video as well. That's is one of the kids. He's one of the boys. So that video is actually shot in his room. and we got it. We got it. So all of the Not Your Girlfriend's girls are all actors as well. So that the other little boy is a kid that goes to their acting school. Uh-huh. And so, yeah, we were able to shoot that at the house. And then she was so awesome. I mean, she really only needed to be there for, you know, maybe a few hours, but she wanted to be there the whole time because it was so special to her. Yeah. And she even came to the part where she even stayed when we were shooting the girls wrestling in that video. She stayed, and then, you know, just she was just great. Again, I am just surrounded by great people, I got to tell you.
Well, hey, I'm going to ask you something else here in a second, but before I forget this, you're talking about your son and him being into wrestling, and I'm reading Peter Gwalnick's biography about Sam Phillips, and it turns out, you know, he has two sons, and his younger son, Jerry, was really into wrestling, and Sam Phillips developed this friendship with a Memphis wrestler that called himself Sputnik, and Sputnik took Jerry under his wing. And actually, Jerry, as a kid, was wrestling. They called him something like the world's oldest midget. And Sputnik would put a cigar in his mouth, put like a fake mustache on him, and he wrestled as a kid. So that's just something to look
into. That's crazy.
It's pretty the Sam Phillips stuff. The book is unbelievable, just really well written. So back to you guys. Now, Bowling for Soup, you guys can't play out right now. Are you doing any streaming any sort of gigs online that people can check out soon?
Absolutely. Yeah, I have. So, you know, when this whole thing happened, I suffered for some pretty gnarly anxiety and depression. And one of the things that I can't deal with is the unknown. I don't like, you know, even like if we're planning something for the weekend, I'm like, "What time are we doing this?" My wife is like, "Yeah, I don't know what time." And I'm like, "Well, can we find out?" You know, like, I just need to know what my day is going to be like. And so here we find ourselves in a situation back in March where not only do we not know what next week's going to be, we don't know what next month or the summer or anything is going to be. And shows start getting canceled or whatever. So, you know, I wasn't worried about getting the sickness or any of the things like that. I was just miserable. And so I did an online show on Stage It, and it went amazingly. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to do another few of these next week. And then I'm going to do a few next week. And then I started getting asked to do charity shows and telethons and things like that. Mm-hmm. So since March 19th, I've done 57 shows online, and I've done 43 of them on Stage It. And so I actually am it's called my social distancing tour. And there's even a tour shirt that will have all the dates on it. So I'm going to finish it up by the end of the month. It's going to have about 50 shows on there. And you'll be able to get it and like say, oh, I watched this one, I watched this one, I watched this one. And then proceeds from it are going to Music Cares, which I've been trying to donate to as often as I can, just because of the work that they do and the help that they've provided, even for crew guys and musicians who through all this can't work. And so yes, we are doing that. And then I'm doing a bunch of shows like that. You can find it on any of the Bowling for Soup socials or mine. I'm everywhere at JARET2113. We're in the process right now of figuring out a full band live stream that we can do probably around the first part of August. And full production, we're in the same room, like a show. And so we're planning that out now.
Oh, cool. Well, we'll keep our eyes peeled, my friend. And I want us to go out with, you guys write lots and lots of fun songs, but with a fun tune. And I know drinking and partying is certainly a theme that runs through your songbook. Alluded to it in a number of album titles, Drunk Enough to Dance, I Know You Don't Deserve, Sorry for Partying, Lunch Drunk Love, 2016's Drunk Dynasty. We mentioned that a couple of times. Songs like Drink a Beer on a Sunday and Hooray for Beer. And I want us to go out on Hooray for Beer. Do you still enjoy drinking beer?
I do. Well, you know what? I got to admit, I don't like beer. I drink Miller Lights, and that's the only beer I like. So when people are like, you got to try this beer, I'm like, I won't like it. I like Miller Lights and water. That's it.
Here's my thing, because this is what I was going to say. I was going to say, years ago, when beer drinking became a thing I could purchase legally, there was no such thing as microbreweries. And initially, that was a land of wonderment when they developed, you know, because at that point, it was like beer was just terrible. It was like watered down, saddle of hops. But these days, there's so many, 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 many microbreweries. Not all animals are equal. And like yourself, it's kind of like, man, you know, I don't need a nutmeg, burnt coffee roasted things in my beer.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I don't, that's just it. Like I don't need to take a sip of it and think about what I'm tasting and stuff like that. And the way that I explain this, we do really, really well in Europe. And people will just be like, oh my God, your beer is just water, and you need to drink like a really thick like beer or whatever. And I go, I like to drink a beer that I would drink after mowing the lawn. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the last thing you want to do is mow the lawn and then have a cup of Guinness. You know, like that does not sound refreshing at all.
Well, I agree. In fact, those heavy beers, I mean, drinking that and getting up on stage and doing a show is just like, man, it's just something else to weigh me down, you know?
Right. And the burps that those things produce. I mean, you know what I mean? Can you imagine singing and then burping up your nutmeg orange peel?
Well, Jared, I mean, it's the air that comes out the back end, too. I mean, if you guys are on tour and traveling.
Right. And that happens on stage. And then you get the evil eye from stage left and right.
Yeah. And then sometimes you might be the front man in the middle of the stage and you get falsely accused.
Exactly right. Yep. Yeah. That's exactly right.
I'm sure your guys, though, you know, there's a rift in the atmosphere, and pretty much you can figure out who that is. You know, it's like, I know what your diet is. That's you.
Yes. 100%. That is your brand. Exactly.
Well, Jared, thanks so much for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Oh, man, I have really had a blast. I got to be honest. This has been a really fun time. And thank you so much for asking such great questions and for really actually diving into what I do and what I've done. And it means a lot. So, again, thanks for having me, man.
Oh, thank you. All right, right now, let's sing the praises of Suds with Hooray for Beer. It's Bowling for Soup in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
I was lost and down before you turned my life around. I never knew a love like this could happen. And they said I was too young, but when I turned 21, you gave me hope that's everlasting. Now everything is going my way, the sun shining all around me, bells are ringing and the birds are singing.
Hooray for Beer! That's Bowling for Soup off their 2009 album, Sorry for Partying. And this is the Mighty Manfred. Thanks again to the band's frontman, Jarrett Reddick, for speaking with me on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing both parts 1 and 2 of our podcast. Remember to follow and subscribe, rate and review, and join me again next week for your Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.